The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.
Welcome to The Counter, everybody. We brought an old friend back today. Stephen Ruiz is here. Stephen, whatever happened to you? Where'd you go?
I'm just homeless now. I'm just living on the streets.
Oh, he's
off the lay of the land. No, I write for The Ringer now. I've moved on.
The Ringer? Oh, I think I've heard of that. It's a pretty cool site. Pretty good, I guess.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. We brought Steven in because he wrote about Lamar Jackson and wanted to talk to him about that and what he saw from the Ravens finally beating the Chiefs, finding a way. So we'll dig in on that. Charles McDonald's here with me, as per usual. Chuck, what's happening?
Nothing much. I'm ready for another week of NFL action. I'm also ready to see if Davis Mills survives his battle with the defense tonight.
Oh my God, we have to talk to Steven about Davis Mills.
I think when we did the draft grades last draft, I wrote...
I refused
to acknowledge his existence until he started an NFL game. Now I have to do it. I didn't realize it was going to be week two.
He's starting the same time as Justin Fields, and only because Justin Fields, the guy blocking him, got hurt. So... I don't know. Maybe you were wrong about Davis Mills, man. He's the truth.
I doubt it.
So we'll talk about Chuck's story about Justin Fields, sort of look into how we think that's going to go. And then eventually Charles and I will go over picks for each game this week. Should be fun. All right, Steven. Lamar Jackson, he finally did it. He finally beat Patrick Mahomes. This was like, you called it an albatross. It sort of seemed like one, something that people like to talk about, especially people who, just hate Lamar Jackson. I'm not sure why, but...
you are.
You just think, you know, he can't pass and you just can't win that way in the NFL. And you showed us why that assumption is not true. What did you see from the film on this game that stuck out for you? Was this something different the Ravens did, or was this just finally sort of like, this is what the Ravens do, and it actually worked this time? Because it works most of the time, but less so against a team as good as the Chiefs.
Well, I think it was a lot of what they've done. It's just that they didn't abandon it quickly as they have done against the Chiefs in the past. Like I mentioned it in the article that their pass rate against the Chiefs in the last two matchups where they fell behind early was around 60%. And in this one, it was 39%. And they were behind the whole game. And it was a high scoring environment. Like, it's not an environment that you expect to see a lot of runs. But the Ravens had the highest run percentage of any team during the week. And that includes teams that just blew out their opponent and ran the clock out for the second half. So I think that's what it was. It was this team finally embraced that Lamar... In the run game, when the ball is in his hands, he could produce plays that are as explosive as you'll get from the best passers in the league. And they kept doing it, and that's how they came back into this game.
Right. Yeah, one of the things here that really stuck out for me is, quantifying just how the Ravens defense, offense, the run game is not, you can't treat it like any other run game, right? Like it would be ridiculous for most teams to continue running when they get down, right? Because the pass for I think every other team, maybe with the exception of the Titans and Browns, who you mentioned in here, the pass game is infinite. It's just so much more effective, especially in situations like that. But with the Ravens, you're just dealing with a totally different situation. You used Sports Info Solutions boom and bust rate metrics. A boom play is one that creates at least one expected point added. A bust play is any that results in negative one expected points or fewer. Since the start of last season, Lamar's option runs have produced boom plays 20.6% of the time with a bust rate of 5.6. Some context, the Browns led all teams in 2020 with a boom rate of 26.9 on passing plays, and the Chiefs led all teams with a bust rate of 12.1 because Mahomes gets crazy every now and then. In other words, Lamar's runs are producing the big plays you get in the passing game while avoiding the inherent risks of putting the ball in the air. Like, those numbers are insane. Like, Lamar Jackson is
God.
It's cheating,
right?
It's just cheating.
And I know Chuck is a big proponent of the counter bash play, but that play and inverted veer are the plays that I really think changed things for the Ravens offense. Like in the second half of last year, they realized that if we keep running these plays, the ball is going to end up in Lamar's hands most of the time. And that's when we get these big plays. And that's what happened in the Chiefs game. Like, they ran inverted veer, they ran counter bash. They obviously ran the other runs to keep the defense honest, but that's the way they can ensure themselves getting the ball in Lamar's hands, which is hard to do if you don't have those plays in your playbook, because your typical zone read play, the defense can dictate who's keeping the ball just by what the unblocked defender does.
Right. So you guys should go read this article. You find it at The Ringer. But Steven explains in there, basically on those two plays, the counter bash and inverted veer, the read is the opposite. So Lamar actually keeps the ball on those plays, even though the guy sits down, the unblocked defender sits down. And so it just has added more diversity. Is Greg Roman doing a good job, like, overall? Do you feel like?
I'll let Chuck take that one.
I still don't think so. No,
right. I would agree with him.
Look, I mean, I guess I'll give him credit for being able to, you know, build running games with like these super duper freaky athletic quarterbacks like Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson and Tyrod Taylor. Like, all right, that's cool, but can you figure out how to build a drop back passing game or just a passing game in general that, you know, isn't just straight up constipated all the time? Because Steven posted, I think, I don't know, remember if it was during the game or the day after, but like the X and O's drop that you did, it's like three guys running into like a 10-yard radius of each other in the red zone. Like, come on, Greg, you've been doing this for he's been doing NFL play calling really as long as I can remember being conscious about what's going on in the field. Yeah. But he still hasn't really been able to figure that part out. But hey, you know, his run games are good, and how he sequences them and how he uses quarterback talent is good. But I feel like even then, like the run game is so reliant on having a really good running talent at quarterback.
Right. A player that is there any other player that,
no,
ever? I mean, what about Vic? Could he have done this?
Yeah. Vic could have done it, but he obviously didn't play in an era where they embraced it like they're doing now.
Right. I'm just wondering, like, what's the list of actual, like, of athletes who, if you took them in their prime and put them in Lamar Jackson's spot, how many do we think could do this?
It's like, two.
Yeah. Maybe Cam.
But I would say Cam is like a different type of runner. It's not going to be explosive like it is. It's going to be consistent down to down. You're going to get 5 yards every time. But with Vic, and even I think Lamar is even like an evolution of Vic. And I think Vic has said something like this before in the past. Like, even Lamar is the next step from Vic. I think Lamar is in his own class of runner and his own class of weapon. Like, we've never seen anything like this, because he is a better passer than Vic also.
Yeah.
I think that's what separates him.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfair because the evolution, like, we didn't, like, people didn't let black players play quarterback for a long time. Like, just didn't even consider it. And then when they did, they told them not to run, right? It was frowned upon. So, like, it's not really a fair comparison. It's not like the opportunities were not there, which is a theme in America. But it also applies to playing the quarterback position.
Yeah, just because you allow someone to do something after a long time of not doing it doesn't mean like your changes on it just radically change overnight. You know, it's not like racism ended when the Civil Rights Act was passed. Well, we're all done. We did it, America. We're good. It takes a long time to figure this stuff out. So. I'm glad that we're finally getting to see these guys get a chance, because, you know, 20 years ago, Lamar Jackson might be like an Antoine Randle-El instead of.
They tried to make him Antoine Randle-El like 3 years ago during the draft. Like, Bill Polian tried to make him Antoine Randle-El.
Yeah. Right. Now he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, just another aside, I love that whenever you're watching a game, and this is honestly why I muted Lamar's name off of Twitter. I have his name muted because I just don't want to see any more takes about him. Is every time, especially now that we're in the contract talks, if he has a bad play or he throws an interception, you pick up people, oh, how much are you going to pay Lamar Jackson? Like, how about you just wait and watch the rest of the game? Or are you really insinuating that the Ravens should lowball their unanimous MVP quarterback or not pay him? Like, say it with your chest. Like, say what you really want to say. Say that you don't think that they should pay him. Don't just, like, you know, try to skirt around it by saying, oh, I don't know how much you pay Lamar Jackson. You give him a blank check and figure out the rest later.
And speaking of these double standards, I kind of hinted at it at the beginning of the piece, but I never really elaborated on it. But Lamar, like, the talk is always, oh, can they beat Kansas City? Can he beat Patrick Mahomes? Meanwhile, Josh Allen has never beaten Patrick Mahomes. Right. Baker Mayfield has never beaten Patrick Mahomes. Nobody except for Tom Brady has beaten Patrick Mahomes. Why is it only Lamar? And I mean, we know why, but that's like the thing for me. Like, he did it, and he did it in his own way. And there's, like, I don't think you can question that this works. Like, it worked against the best offense in the league, the most explosive offense, in a game where Lamar didn't even play well, and they were able to come back and put up 36 points with their run game alone. And it's not like Lamar is a bad passer. When you just isolate his passing stats, he's still one of the very best passers in the NFL.
So you have in here a tweet embedded, and it's how quarterbacks perform in pure passing situations. So basically where the expected pass percentage is greater than 70%. And Lamar Jackson is – so Patrick Mahomes is like – that's probably really the takeaway from this chart, is that Mahomes is like more than twice – as good as anyone else. But then Lamar Jackson is next on the list, and he's slightly ahead of Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger. Lamar Jackson obviously knows how to pass the ball. And as you guys are saying, it's not even like he has a great system for passing. Like, what Greg Romans has built for him is not that great. How good can this get, Steven? You hint here that you feel like Rashad Bateman returning. So he was the first round pick out of Minnesota for the Ravens. Has been out for a while now and is expected to miss a few more games. I mean, how much could this open up the offense and really take the Ravens to the next level?
I feel like personnel wise, they'll be fine. They'll have a good passing game on paper. It's just, what does Greg Roman do with it? Because you get Rashad Bateman back, and I'm assuming he plays on the outside, so Hollywood Brown could finally move to the slot where his middle schooler body is like less of a liability. Like, this guy, I was about to cuss. This guy is 170 pounds, like, playing X receiver. It doesn't make any sense. But maybe Rashad Bateman takes over that role and they kick him inside where he could, like, do things that small receivers do. And I think Sammy Watkins has been pretty good so far. Like, in that Raiders game, he made a couple big plays. Yeah, I think and then you add it on to this run game, which is just a unique force. Nothing that we can't compare this to anything else. Like, I know teams people like to lump the Ravens run heavy play action approach to what the Titans do, what the Browns do, but that's totally different. Like, that's contingent on the run game, the offensive line blocking, and Derrick Henry and Nick Chubb being amazing. What the Ravens do is totally surrounded by the quarterback. It doesn't matter who the offensive linemen are. Doesn't matter who the running backs are. It's going to work. And Steve Spagnuolo actually said this in the run-up to the game. He was like, we don't care who's playing running back. We don't care who's playing offensive line. We care about number 8. The offense is going to work no matter what. So I think that's another big thing. It's like, and that's what I wanted to drive home, is it doesn't matter if the passing game never gets to the point that we want it to get to. Like, Lamar is good enough to carry this offense.
But Steven, what about when he gets hurt, huh?
I don't know. Who's the backup now? Is it Tyler Huntley?
I think so.
It's Trace McSorley, right?
No, he got cut.
It's the Utah quarterback, Huntley.
The people who say it's the system that's helping Lamar, like, we'll get if Lamar ever gets hurt, then we'll know.
Yeah, just before we move on, just back to the point of getting criticized for not being able to beat Patrick Mahomes. Like, do people who say that out loud realize how crazy that is? Just looking at the Chiefs record, in the 3 seasons Mahomes has been like the full-time starter, and the games where Mahomes has been the starting quarterback, 12-4, 2018, 11-3, 2019, 14-1, 2020. What the hell? We're all in agreement that this is the best quarterback talent that we've probably ever seen, and you're just going to rag on Lamar because he can't get past that? Like, who cares? No one thinks he's as good as Patrick Mahomes. No one is as good as Patrick Mahomes. So it's kind of weird that we get stuck up on that.
And he's the best quarterback talent we've ever seen, paired with one of the better offensive coaches we've ever seen, paired with one of the fastest wide receivers we've ever seen paired with one of the best tight ends we've ever seen. Like, I mean, right. He obviously has so many more advantages than like Steven points out, Lamar Jackson does. Like, they have not surrounded him with good receivers.
The list of quarterbacks who have actually beaten Patrick Mahomes, I'm looking it up right now. It's like Jacoby Brissett somehow did it, but then it's all Tom Brady and then Houston quarterback number four. And those are the only people that have beaten them.
Yeah. It's. One quick thing on the Ravens. I wanted to get your thought on, Steven. What'd you think of what Wink Martindale did, pulling back on the blitz, which, you know, Patrick Mahomes had killed them before. And is this defense going to be good enough given all the injuries, to carry the, to, you know, keep up with Lamar and make this team a real Super Bowl threat?
No, because like the Chiefs moved the ball at will on Sunday night. I don't think that did anything. They got some timely turnovers, which helped. 36 points be enough to win a game, which it should be 90% of the time. But yeah, I planned on writing, making this article like, the Ravens solved the Chiefs problem. But I watched the film of the defense and I was like, oh, no, this is bad. It's not good.
Not solved. All right. Let's talk Justin Fields. He's going to play football this week purely because Andy Dalton is hurt. Chuck had a take on this. You know, we have not been shy about how we feel about this one, but what are the chances that Justin Fields pulls a Tom Brady and just steals this job and never looks back?
Well, I think that it's a very real possibility. And the thing with Justin Fields that is just so baffling to me is I don't understand why Matt Nagy keeps backing himself into this corner publicly where, like, he's basically just kind of insinuating there's no chance that Justin Fields plays well enough to, you know, take the starting job from Andy Dalton. And I don't understand. See, that's how I get hung up on it. If we were talking about a situation where it was the Chiefs and Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes, like Alex Smith was, I think he was coming off a year where he led the league in passer rating or something like that.
That was the year.
Okay. But still, like, he was playing good football. It's just not really a comparable situation to other quarterbacks that have sat, because we all know that Justin Fields is better than Andy Dalton, especially at this point in his career. And I don't understand why Matt Nagy keeps coming out and saying that Andy's going to be the starter, because I don't know who that helps in the long term or the short term. Maybe he's saying different stuff privately. Maybe this is just to appease Andy Dalton, which again, I don't know why you would care about that really either. But that's the main takeaway for me is that, you know, Justin Fields is certainly good enough to play well against the Browns defense that, you know, to this point has been all right. I mean, I don't really think there's any shame in getting torched by Patrick Mahomes week one, no. But then to come out week two and before Tyrod got hurt, dude, he was 10 for 11, 120 yards, one touchdown, and then he had the run where he got hurt and had to come out of the game. Like, they weren't it's not like that they've been shutting down, you know, quality quarterbacks this year. Then Davis Mills came in and, you know, that was kind of a wrap for the Texans. But, you know, I don't see why Justin Fields couldn't do something similar to what Tyrod was doing. I'm not saying that he's going to go out completely, like, 90% of his passes at 10 yards per attempt, but you can go out and do some damage to this Browns defense, clearly, if he can stay upright with the pass rushes that they have. So it's just kind of weird that there's no vote of confidence that, hey, you know, this guy that we traded up for to get with the 11th pick in the draft and trade the first for is good enough to start, you know, for the rest of the season over Andy freaking Dalton. I really don't understand the public stance that Matt Nagy backed himself into.
Right. And the concern, too, is that if Matt Nagy really believes this, that Andy Dalton is like his starter and it would be hard to get for Justin Fields to catch him, he probably designed an offense for Andy Dalton, right? Like, and now Justin Fields, who is a much more dynamic player, both, I think, throwing and running, like, it's just going to be limited for him. I mean, is this offense in any way optimized for Fields? Like, I think he's going to run it better, but it just seems like they're going to limit him by having an offense that was actually built for Andy Dalton.
Yeah, I feel like it makes more sense to just get on with it and start the Fields era and lean into the offense you're going to build around a player like him, which is going to be different from for an offense you build around Andy Dalton. And we've talked about how important those reps are. Like, those live reps help a quarterback develop faster. I don't get the delay. And it reminds me of what the Bears did with Trubisky, where they were messing around with Mike Glennon and letting him play game. Like, why? What? Why? Mike Glennon?
Got it.
Andy Dalton?
Got to get some Glennon in there, man. Andy Dalton.
Good Lord.
It's just insane. I know we've talked about this before, but look, if Matt Nagy is doing this to save his job, like, what part of this is saving his job? seriously, because that's the part that no one has explained to me, because I know that, you know, Schefter will get up there with whoever's agent is telling him to save the phone crap on ESPN and say, oh, you know, the Bears, you know, they're not playing Matt, they're not playing Justin Fields. Look at Tom Brady behind Drew Bledsoe. You know, Aaron Rodgers behind Brett freaking Favre. These are similar situations. No, they're not. They're not. If you're Matt Nagy and the clock's ticking, because honestly, if things start to go south after that Bengals win, you finally got on the board, but I don't really think that that was overly convincing. I mean, you beat a team by 3 points, and they had a stretch of plays where they threw three straight interceptions. So I'm not sure that that's something that you can really get too fired up about. Why not just play the best quarterback? Like, why are you not putting the best players on the field if you're trying to win this thing? I don't really understand what extending this Andy Dalton leash does for you outside of just put a bad quarterback on the field when you need to win games to keep your job. It's not sensible.
I feel like it's punting on fourth down from like the 50 yard. Like, it's just a like conservative football man thing where he's like, well, I think he's trying to buy one extra year by saying, well, we're bringing Justin Fields along slowly. And so he wasn't ready until the 10th game. And we went, whatever the number would be now, 8-9, like, because we were, you know, I was being patient, doing the right thing. So next year is the year. Like, it feels like that's the only explanation I can come up with. It's like when a college basketball coach comes in and he like says that the program's in ruin and there's nothing he can do. So he's just trying to buy himself time and a honeymoon period. It just feels like that's what's happening here. It's so bizarre because Justin Fields is so ready. Like, he's that guy. Like, it's
got to be an extending his job security situation, because I leaning on Andy Dalton to save your job for you just isn't a place I would ever want to be in. It just doesn't make sense. Like, oh yeah, Andy Dalton's the guy that's going to save my job. No, it's right. Not going to happen. And it's like the 49ers situation where, like, have you seen those games? Kyle Shanahan is calling plays like he has a rookie quarterback with Jimmy G back there. Why don't you just play the rookie then if you're going to call plays like that anyway?
Yeah. Oh man.
At least with Jimmy, like, you could tell me we're paying him a lot of money to not sit on the bench. You're not doing that with Andy. Like, grow up, dude. I don't know what else there is to say. Use your eyes. Fight back.
There's too much justice on this pod.
I know.
I know he was on it last week. I did the residual
a couple weeks ago before the season.
he would have been really mad at you praising Sammy Watkins. So he's very against any.
He keeps doing this bit where he thinks that everyone is saying that this is Sammy Watkins' breakout season. I'm like, can you tell me one person who said that?
Justice has a lot of those like bits he has in his head. Like, one time
they're called straw men. I think Mina called him out on it.
Right. He came into the chat one time and was like, why did you guys tell me North Carolina's offensive line was good? I was like, nobody in this chat has ever cared about North Carolina's offensive line or ever had an opinion on it. What are you talking about?
Man, if somebody came to me talking about North Carolina's offensive line, I would tell them to seek help.
Get that person out of your life immediately.
Steven, why we got you, I want to know, what do you think is going to happen with this taunting rule? What's going on here? Are we just going to deal with this all season long?
I think they're going to stop calling it. Like, that seems to be the thing they do with these point of emphasis.
Right.
Is like,
remember back in the day.
Point of emphasis? Points of emphasis?
Yeah, I think points of emphasis. Yes. Yeah. Remember back when they were like, you weren't allowed to spear people and then they just like sort of let it go.
Everyone complained about the calls and then it stopped after like week 3. I think that's what's going to happen. Hopefully that's what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they're big plays. Like it's the, they're, you know, it's a first down 15 yards and it usually happens after something good. Right. So like,
right. That's why they're celebrating.
Right. So it's a big deal. All right, man. Thanks for stopping by. It's good to know you're still out there doing your thing. I'm glad you landed somewhere. I guess people can check out your work over at The Ringer and on Twitter at the Steven Ruiz. Yeah, man. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been good to be back in the Zencaster room.
Yeah. Love it here. All right. Talk to you later, man.
All right. Later, guys.
Later.
All right. We're back. Let's do some picks. Let's pick against the spread. These spreads are brought to you by Tipico Sportsbook. I got to be honest, Chuck. Rough start for both of you. Charles Curtis is 10-22. Picks against the spread. You're 15-17. So I still got some faith in you that you'll finish the week above 500, I think. But
look, 15-17, that's not bad. No. It's not great, but if you put your money on the right games when you listen to me, you're doing okay. If not, sorry about that. Yeah. But you know, 47% as a non-professional gambler, I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. We're going to go in order of this post is over at For the Win. I guess it's at BetFTW, our betting vertical. NFL picks against the spread. I'm just going to go right in the order here that they appear in the post, starting with this scintillating Panthers-Texans, Sam Darnold, Davis Mills showdown. The Texans are getting 7.5 because they're playing Davis Mills at quarterback against a Panthers defense that is actually pretty good. A lot of buzz this week about this Panthers defense. You went with Carolina.
Yeah, if Tyrod was playing this week, well, I guess the spread probably wouldn't be 7.
Right.
But I'd be more inclined to take the Texans. But if you've watched that Panthers defense, and really especially what they did to New Orleans on Sunday, it's kind of like what Rex Ryan was doing back with the Jets, where they were playing a lot of man coverage, single high, and just blitzing the absolute hell out of James Winston. And they had the Saints offensive line. Their brain was in a blender. They had no idea what was going on. Andres Pete and Cesar Ruiz in the middle, they were just letting free rushes run by them all game. and you know, that if a veteran offensive line is kind of getting messed up by that, with, you know, a veteran coach and Sean Payton and Pete Carmichael and Jameis Winston's been around for a while. Like if they're getting that confused by what's going on, I can just only imagine what a rookie quarterback is going to look like against that defense. So, you know, Thursday Night Football on the road is kind of tough and 7.5 is a lot, but I really think that this Panthers defense specifically, the way that Phil Snow's been calling plays, it's basically the perfect setup to just nuke a rookie quarterback and keep him moving.
Yeah, just not excited to watch anything about this game at all. No. But yeah, that feels about right. Another one I'm not excited about, Bengals Steelers. Steelers are giving up 3.5 in this game, which seems to be an indication with how the Bengals have been meh. This just really seems like an indication that people are starting to realize that Ben Roethlisberger is not, like, I don't know. He's been bad for a while now, and it's not coming back.
Yeah, he stinks. He's been awful this season. Right. And honestly, I think he looks a little worse than last year.
Right.
And it kind of goes back to, like, why is Pittsburgh not taking this quarterback of the future thing more seriously? But it looks like they're about to be kind of in the area where Atlanta is in, where you're just kind of waiting around and seeing what happens in the next few years. But that's not really a good place to be. But for this week, I picked the Steelers because I just don't really know how the Bengals plan on moving the ball and blocking that Steelers front. I'm not sure if TJ Watt is going to play. I'm not sure if they need him to play because they just have such an overwhelming talent advantage in the front, and that's going to make it hard for them to pick up big plays down the field. And, you know, when you have someone like Micah Fitzpatrick getting the cleanup off of those plays that the defensive line makes, you might be able to force him into a few more turnovers like the Bears were able to do last week. I'm expecting this to be pretty low scoring. And it's not because I think the Bengals defense is that good. I just don't really think the Steelers offense, particularly the quarterback, has the juice to keep it going like we have seen them do in previous years. So, you know, I wouldn't watch this game if I were you. I would just kind of keep whatever comes on red zone and know that you spent your Sunday doing something better. And, you know, put your money on the Steelers if you're so inclined to do that.
All right, Bears at Browns. We talked a little bit about this game with Justin Fields' angle. Browns are -6.5. Charles Curtis went with the Bears because he seems very jazzed about Justin Fields. You went with the Browns.
Yeah, I went with the Browns just because I think Justin Fields is good. I think he's more than capable of putting up a performance that shows that he should be the quarterback for the rest of the year, but I don't think that means that they win this game. I think that keeping up with this Browns offense is a really tall task for a rookie quarterback, and it's going to be tough for him to keep score with them. I wrote this week in the Four Verts that, you know, the Browns offense, basically, no matter how they want to beat you, they can. Nick Chubb is playing absolutely insane football right now. And, you know, when you talk about a football team that's that well coached and has that much offensive firepower, going against a rookie making his first start on the road, even if you're a big Justin Fields fan, which I am, you can't really say that that's not a tough test for him. And if you have to tell Justin Fields, like, hey, we might need 30 points or 35 points to come out with the dub here, I'm not really sure that that's something that you can ask of him in his first start. So, you know, I still expect Fields to play well, but I still think that the Browns win pretty comfortably.
All right, we got Chargers Chiefs up next. Two teams coming off, disappointing losses, I think. Chargers sort of beat themselves a little bit. Chiefs obviously had that close one against the Ravens. Chiefs are -6.5. Charles Curtis went Chargers. You went Chiefs. I like how you guys, not a lot of the same picks this week. I like the divergent way that you guys are going about this.
Yeah, I don't know. I just still feel like the Chiefs are a good deal better than the Chargers right now. I know that Justin Herbert is playing like insane football right now, but as a whole, like their offense hasn't been that efficient. And even as well as Justin Herbert's playing, it's not like their passing game has also been that productive throughout the first couple of games. You know, you're basically kind of relying on these big chunk plays where Herbert can save you from a bad look or maybe some mess of protection on the right side because Bulaga's been out. So I just think that the talent advantage is kind of in favor of the Chiefs, and maybe the Chargers defense can step up and start to slow them down because, you know, they've been an above average unit so far. But I just kind of think that the Chiefs, they just look better on offense to me as a whole. Maybe Herbert can provide enough big plays where they can overcome this spread and make it a game. But just when you look at the whole, I just like what the Chiefs are doing a lot more than what the Chargers have put on tape so far.
Cardinals at Jags. Jags are getting 7.5. I loved Vic Fangio this week. You know, I've written like, I don't know, 50 columns in my life ripping into Urban Meyer. And Vic Fangio just destroyed him better than I ever could have by revealing the fact that Urban Meyer told him playing in the NFL is like playing Alabama every week. Like, yeah, buddy. The teams in this league all have pretty equal talent. None of them, you can't just recruit your way to easy wins. Like, you have to really coach. And I don't know. It just seems like Urban has not picked up on that. Or, you know, he may make the jump. He's one of the better college coaches ever, but sure seems doubtful now. You went with the Cardinals in this one. No surprise with the way Kyler Murray's playing.
Yeah, Kyler Murray is really good. He's super duper in sync with the receiving options that he has. And I mean, have you seen how the Jags defense has played so far? They got lit up by Teddy Bridgewater. They got lit up by Tyrod Taylor. I don't really see why it'll be any different this week. Take the Cardinals and just keep it moving.
The football team is traveling to Buffalo to play the Bills. Bills minus 7.5. Both of you went with the football team on this one.
I went with the football team. It was kind of hard for me to do this because, or this was a hard game to pick because usually like the talent advantage that Washington has is their defensive line. But honestly, outside of John Allen, their defensive line hasn't been like that dominant this year. I mean, the Giants offensive line held them at bay for the most part in that game last week on Thursday night. And if you go back and watch that Bills game against Miami, even though they won 35-0, it wasn't like a super convincing win. They had a couple of big plays, but Josh Allen, for the most part, was pretty erratic. They just didn't seem in sync in terms of the passing game. So the reason I took Washington is basically I just think this is going to be one of the sloppy, low-scoring games where nobody can really pull away. And I think that 7.5 points is a lot for this Bills team based on the performance that they've put out so far.
Yeah. Yeah, the Bills have a lot to sort out, I think, on both sides of the football. Reading a couple of things and watching some of the clips going around with Josh Allen, he just seems a little befuddled this year. And I don't know if defenses are doing something, but he's just missing reads, it seems like. And that's for him, he's just not a guy who I think if he doesn't see that open read, that we talked about Brian Daboll last year, getting him those open reads and putting him in position to make throws he can make. It just seems like for whatever reason, that's not happening this year. So we'll have to watch to see, is that a defensive thing? Is it just sort of him hiccuping a little bit? Whether he regulates that or figures it out will be an interesting storyline as we go forward. Ravens at Lions. Lions getting 8.5 at home, which makes sense because they're terrible. Both of you picked the Ravens.
Have you seen the Lions play this year? I mean, I know that they've had some feisty moments, like the right. second half of that, the second half of the 49ers game, the first half of the Packers game. But I just think that slowing down Lamar Jackson is a task that is way too tall for this Lions defense. And maybe they can keep it close for like a quarter or so and play well in spurts. But yeah, that's just not a matchup that's good for any team, and especially one that is like 7 years away from being competitive.
Falcons at Giants in a game that should be absolutely punted to the moon. Minus 2.5 for the Giants here. Both of you went with the Giants.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick my own team after what they've done this year. Kidding me? The Falcons, they've been on in New York. So, I watched the Tampa Bay game.
Right.
And then I watched a week one game against Philadelphia. And, like, this is just a horrific football team. They're by far last in point differential this year with minus 49 points through the first two games of the season, which is really, really hard to do. The team that is, I guess, in 31st place is Miami Dolphins with minus 34. So they're 15 points worse.
Did you extrapolate that over the course of the season? Because
I did not yet.
That's a lot of minus.
I should do that right now. 24.5 times 17 is 416.5 points. So if they keep losing at the rate that they're doing, they're going to be one of the worst teams in NFL history. You just kind of see last week was the same old Falcons. Like you look terrible. Then the third quarter, you're like, oh wait, we have some good football players in this team. And then it all just unravels in the fourth quarter where you're down 25-28. And before you know it, it's 48-25 and the game's over and you look like crap. So I'm expecting this to be the week where people go, hey, wait, do the Giants have a chance to win the NFC East? Is Saquon Barkley back? Is Patrick Graham the GOAT defensive coordinator? And that's where they're going to have to end up. So take the Giants, but please do not watch this game.
Colts at Titans. Titans minus 5.5. This one, so people are still sort of like blaming. They're watching Colts film in Indianapolis and saying, well, Carson, he's just not getting a chance. But like that has been a story of his entire career. Like some of this is Carson Wentz. Like I'm sure that the Colts offensive line has not been great, but also like that's just who he is. He gets himself in trouble in the pocket. He does not have great pocket presence. He is not moving to spaces where he can buy himself time. He is often moving into the rush. Like, you need to realize that's who he is. Also, the Colts did not seem to realize that he gets hurt all the time. And so he now has two sprained ankles, and they apparently do not have a ton of faith in last year draft pick Jacob Eason. I forget what round he went in, fourth, fifth. Because they've also elevated Brett Hundley, and I think he is getting a lot of reps with the one. So it is entirely unclear who the Colts are even going to play at quarterback. And the options are hobbled Carson Wentz, Jacob Eason, or Brett Hundley. So both of you picked the Titans.
Yeah, I saw some people saying that the Colts might do like a two quarterback thing with Eason and Hundley.
Gosh.
And it's just hard pass on that. take the Titans. Like, I really don't understand how they're going to keep it close. Maybe the Colts defense can step up and save the day for them, but it's just... It's such a quarterback disadvantage that I really think it's a pretty easy pick for the Titans here.
Saints at Patriots. Patriots -2.5. So I don't know. This should be a good game. Both of you went with the Patriots under the premise that Bill Belichick will flummox Jameis Winston because Jameis often does that to himself. So, of course, the greatest defensive mind ever can probably pull that off. What do you see with this?
Yeah, I think the Patriots defense, I don't know if the Patriots defense is like all the way back.
Actually good.
Yeah. Because last week was just Zach Wilson, that was like a fake performance. I don't really know how much stock you could put into that. And the week before that, honestly, they did a damn good job against the Dolphins defense, but then they just had some unlucky crap at the end of the game that caused them to lose. So I took the Patriots here just because, you know, I think the Patriots defense is playing well. And if anyone can like replicate what the Panthers just did, what the Panthers just did to the Saints, like Bill Belichick has a ton of experience running a lot of, you know, zero blitzes, you know, cover one stuff where you're sending an extra man just to keep Jameis Winston from standing back there clean and kind of picking apart defenses like he did against the Packers in week one. You know, I have a little concern about the Patriots offense because, you know, quietly Mac Jones did not have a good game really at all against the Jets, but Zach Wilson was so bad that no one really seemed to be talking about it. So I'm going to roll with the Patriots just because I think that their defense might be good again after, you know, last year they were really kind of low on talent due to, you know, opt outs and injuries, but you know those guys are back, and I think that it just kind of looks like that Patriots defense or a Patriots defense that we're used to again.
Jets at Broncos. Broncos -10.5. I assume that the NFL uses mostly like computers to make the schedule and then maybe manipulates it a little bit, but like, this having Trevor Lawrence play Vic Fangio and then Zach Wilson play Bill Belichick and then follow that up with Vic Fangio is pretty diabolical. Pretty rough for those guys.
I don't know. After what Zach Wilson put on tape last week, I really don't know how you can have any confidence that they'll get into the end zone against the Broncos defense. I mean, the Broncos defense, really every level, they have somebody that can ruin your day. And that secondary is just utterly insane. I know Bradley Chubb is out, but still, you got Von Miller. And this is a Jets offense that just looks completely discombobulated right now. And hopefully, you know, Zach Wilson doesn't get more shook than he was last week. But I really don't see how this one is close unless the Jets defensive line just kind of takes over a little bit and mucks it up and gets in Teddy Bridgewater's face. But even then, like, Teddy's playing pretty good ball to start the season. And this Jets secondary isn't exactly a tough task.
Yeah. What are we on now? Dolphins, Raiders. Surprised by the line here. Raiders -3.5. Jacoby Brissett is going to play. Tua has bruised ribs, broken ribs. He's got a rib injury. I can't remember if they said how bad it is, but man, the Dolphins have struggled so far this year.
Yeah, the thing is, like, even if Tua was in this game, I think that I would still take the Raiders, just because I don't think Tua's looked good at all this year. And I know that he only played, like, I think it's 6 or 7 plays against the Bills last week before he got hurt with the rib injury. But, you know, it just looks slow. It looks like a timid offense. He's not really getting away from pressure. And then, you know, Brissett, I think that he's a capable backup and, you know, someone you don't mind having on your team. But the truth is, like, when he's gotten into the game over the past few years, he hasn't really been all that productive. Like, honestly, he hasn't been productive at all, especially in terms of yards per attempt. So you kind of look where Jacoby is. You look at the Raiders or the Dolphins offensive line, which is bad. Like, you might need 5 new starters bad in the offseason. And, you know, the Raiders surprisingly have a pretty good pass rush duo for, like, the first time since, like, 2000 maybe, or even earlier than that, with Yannick Ngakoue and Max Crosby come off the edge. They've been really good, and I think that they're going to give those Dolphins tackles hell. So whether it's Tua or Brissett in the game, I don't really think it matters, because that offensive line is hard to overcome, and it's not like Tua has been showing off really any playmaking so far this year.
Right. Seahawks at Vikings. Vikings -1.5. Two teams just really going through it, I feel like. Just Seahawks obviously lost a close game late to the Titans. The Vikings have just been sort of a mess. You guys both went with the Seahawks here.
Yeah, Russell Wilson. Really, that's it. And I actually struggle on this one a little bit more, you know, than that simple explanation. But I just kind of like Russell Wilson to overcome this and figure out a way to keep pace with, you know, the Vikings' little trio of skill weapons with Justin Jefferson, right, Dalvin Cook, and Adam Thielen. Like, those guys can really rip off chunks and win and win a game for you. But, you know, I really don't know. It's just the Seahawks and Vikings, they always seem to have these weird close games at the end. And when you're talking about teams that can be that close, I'm just more inclined to take the one with the better quarterback that can make good plays. So I'm going to roll with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks on this. But, you know, this is one game I'm actually looking forward to watching.
Yeah.
Just because every time these teams play each other, they seem to just lose their minds and forget how to play football for, like, a good stretch. So, you know, I'm always in for some good football folly stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like this should be a really good game. Also, the Seahawks, I mean, both these coaches are dudes who have been around forever and say things. You know, they don't really hold back that much. And Pete Carroll, I think, if you read some of his quotes talking about the offense, and, you know, they brought in Shane Waldron, who's sort of a 180 turn from where they were under Schottenheim. You know, like, they just, I really feel like there's a lot of behind the scenes fighting about what this offense is supposed to be and how Carroll wants it to go and what Shane Waldron has done in the past. And that we're really just sort of seeing that fight happen on the field a little bit as they try to figure out what they want to be and how Russell Wilson fits into that. So I kind of expect the Seahawks to start getting a little bit better as that sorts itself out. And so I think that pick makes sense. Bucks at Rams. Rams are getting 1.5 in this one. Obviously a game we're all looking forward to.
I don't know if this is a hot take, but I kind of like the Rams to win this game.
Like it.
I just kind of think that, you know, watching the Falcons last week, there were moments, especially in the third quarter, where they were moving the ball, like, for real. And, like, putting together long drives, sustaining them. And, you know, I just kind of look at it, like, if a team that has no big play potential so far is able to move it on Tampa Bay's defense, then I think that Matthew Stafford and the Rams should be kind of looking their chops at the ability to pick up chunk plays while sustaining drives. And it's not like that. This Tampa Bay defense has not been quite as dominant as the one that we saw towards the end of last season. You know, they're not getting home to the quarterback all that much. They're not causing quite as much pressure as last year. In terms of yards per play, they're just kind of above average right now. And I don't know if above average gets you home against his Rams offense. And on the flip side, you know, Aaron, I'd still just believe in the talent of, like, Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey to just wreck a game. I know that Tom Brady is once again playing like ridiculously good football, and you know that offense is just like second nature to him with how comfortable he looks in it and the rapport that he has with his receivers. But you know, I just kind of like the Rams to do enough on offense to outscore Brady in the Bucs, even though this is going to be a tough task for the Rams defense too. I just think that this Tampa Bay defense is not quite where it was last year, and they can certainly get better throughout the year. But right now, I think that slowing down the Rams offense might be a tough challenge for them.
Yeah. It's so nice to have Matthew Stafford plopped into this working offense. You know, he, like, obviously early in his career, he had Calvin Johnson, and we sort of watched that and said, well, he's got one of the best wide receivers ever. Like, how much is it him? And then he just sort of like was in the desert, right? Because the Lions were terrible, had terrible rosters, terrible coaches. And he just kind of like steadily did his thing. And I'm not, you know, we probably just didn't appreciate him because he was on a bad team with surrounded by bad players. And so now to have him be able to like work in a functioning team is really nice to see. And it's been exactly what we expected, right? Like you said, just the rapport he has and the understanding of the offense, and the throws he can make compared to Jared Goff last year. It's really fun to see. Packers at 49ers, Niners minus 3.5.
Yeah, I want the 49ers here. I really don't know how the Packers are going to slow down this run game. I don't even know who is playing running back for the 49ers this week, but I know when I see Kyle Shanahan against a defense that has zero tackles for losses in the first two games, and there were moments where the Detroit Lions were running the ball on them, he's going to figure that out. And, you know, honestly, when you look at the Packers, I know that the final score from last week was pretty convincing, but, you know, they've only played one half of good football so far this year. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, this line kind of underrates the talent on this 49ers team, because one thing I'll give the Eagles, even though I think that they're kind of overrated, is they have a good defensive front, and they were still able to figure out how to move the ball a little bit on that, even though Jimmy Garoppolo just had like the most flaccid game ever, where, you know, any time that he was asked to do something that required a little bit of quarterback work, he just missed it and was wide open. But, you know, Kyle Shanahan will give him the opportunities. I have not really been impressed by Joe Barry at all, the Packers' defensive coordinator, and you know, you still got Kevin King out there who is just a marked man every time he steps on the field. So I'm going to take the 49ers and the points. And I kind of like them to win a little bit big on this game.
We brought up a Justice Mosqueda grievance earlier with the Sammy Watkins thing. Another one of his is the way the NFC East is constantly pumped into primetime. Monday night, Eagles at Cowboys. Sure, this game is interesting. The Cowboys are minus 3.5. You went with the boys.
Yeah, I just don't think that Jalen Hurts can keep up with Dak Prescott. And I kind of think it's that simple. I don't. The Eagles, like, they should be able – they should have an advantage when it comes to their offensive line versus the Cowboys' defensive line. But the Cowboys' defense has been kind of all right so far. I would say they've been, like – probably an average defense, which is, hey, it's not bad for them, especially considering where they were last year. So I'll take the Cowboys here with the points. And I'm like slightly interested in watching this game, but I got to say the Eagles offense last week against the 49ers looked more like what I thought the Eagles offense was going to look like coming into the season. Not when they played that, you know, SEC team in Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah, poor SEC team. Eagles losing Brandon Graham is huge. I mean, he's really the guy that keeps the defensive line together a little bit. So Fletcher Cox is obviously the best player, but it'll be interesting, you know, just losing that depth and going against a team that can run the ball. And like you said, Dak has been great so far. All right, that's what we got for this week. We'll be back Monday, review week 3, Monday or Tuesday, I guess. We've been doing it Tuesday, so probably Tuesday again gives us time to figure out what's going on. Chuck, I wanted to tell you that you had this great line on Twitter the other day where you called, you said that Matt Ryan's arm has a little bit of pulled pork to it, which is amazing, except that I'm planning on smoking some pork shoulder this weekend. And now I'm just going to be shredding this meat and thinking about Matt Ryan.
It's fallen off the bone a little bit for sure. I don't really know why that came to me. Why it's so funny, but like just anytime you think about like a quarterback's arm like starting to get up there in age.
Yeah, usually you call it a noodle. You say like, oh, he's got a noodle arm now. But noodle I like the pulled pork thing.
Yeah, so pulled pork like to me it has like a connotation of aging to it because young quarterbacks there even if you don't have a strong arm like. You're still at the peak of like whatever your arm strength is, but we know that Matt Ryan's not what he used to be, and you know the arm is falling off the bone a little bit, and you know maybe you should have taken a quarterback from Ohio State that you can't make that pulled pork quite yet.
I'm glad that's not haunting you though. I'm glad that you're just moving on.
Oh no, yeah, I definitely won't be tweeting like a crazy person. Goes off for 375 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Oh man. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. And we will talk to you next time. Take care.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.